It's the Hoffman Show. We are on the Team 980, streaming live on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn Radio. And of course, you can also watch us live on YouTube at the Team 980. Our pleasure now to welcome to the show Joel Corey, former NFL agent. You probably heard him talk contracts either on the station or on many other outlets before. He is the best in the game doing it, and we are very happy to have him. Because Joel, I don't know if you've heard, but there's a receiver here that is still here in D.C. while the team is in New England, and he would like a new deal. So I'm very appreciative of your time. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I want to kind of start at the end, if we can. We can get into the details, and we should, and I have a lot of kind of more detail-oriented questions that I think you are one of the few people who can answer in a second. But it does feel like this thing is going to head towards Terry signing some kind of extension in the $28 to $30 million range for probably 3 years with, let's say, plus or minus $5 million guaranteed from the $60 million that DK Metcalf got, whether he winds up going over or under, TBD. And those details matter. But is there an outcome that you see outside of that range that is possible, or do you kind of agree with the consensus here that that's where this is headed?
Yeah, I agree, except for one thing. I have a hard time seeing Terry signing for less than T. Higgins for one reason. T. Higgins signed for $28.75 million per year. He's the top of the number two receiver market. He might be a number one receiver someplace else, but not in Cincinnati because of Ja'Marr Chase. Terry Higgins is your number one receiver, so that's a bar that I think is his minimum. Obviously, he's going to want over $30 million, but yeah, generally, I agree with what you're saying.
Okay, so if we agree that's the case, the devil then becomes in the details. And I've spent a lot of time trying to explain to folks the best that I can at my knowledge level about kind of how that DK Metcalf $33 million a year number is on some level a fake number, right? It's inflated by a final year that is not guaranteed, and there's basically no way that DK Metcalf is going to see that, but it pumps up the AAV and it's a good headline for the agent. I know that's something that you tried to avoid as an agent. You were someone who was very focused, and I urge you talk about this with Robert Mays when you guys did that big show back in June about the salary cap, where you're like, give me the substance of the deal. But I guess my question would be, Joel, if that's important to Terry, what would stop Adam Peters from giving him an equally fake final year on an extension to get the AAV number up there so that kind of everybody wins? The team gets the numbers that work for their cap sheet, the cash flow is right, and the agent gets the headline, and Terry gets the respect, if you will, of being a $30 million receiver.
Yeah, there's nothing really preventing that. You're right. That's something I didn't want to do. I looked at the deal is the deal. I don't need a fake year to inflate it. That also gets to be used for recruiting purposes because parents, prospective NFL players don't really know the granular details. Because if you take out DK Metcalf last year, the deal average is basically 32.1. So I would imagine that's where the Commanders are saying, no, it's not almost 33. This is what it is. In Pittsburgh, Metcalf got something which rarely happens. They got into the 21st century and out of the dark ages with contracts in 2021 with TJ Watt. That was the first time that they did guarantees that weren't just injury for a veteran contract. Ben Roethlisberger, the most he ever had were injury guarantees, not skill and cap guarantees where money was fully guaranteed. Metcalf is the third guy who has a fully guaranteed salary in the second year. It's happened to Watt now twice and Minka Fitzpatrick a couple of years ago. So this is unusual for Pittsburgh. He's got $60 million guaranteed through the first 2 years. He's got a small fifth day or third day league year roster bonus in the third year and like $20 million guaranteed for injuries. So that's where the $80 million number comes from. But it's really 60 in what I call true guarantees.
Do you think that McLaurin will wind up getting that number, or do you think he will wind up slightly under that number?
Well, I think whatever's in the first 2 years is going to be fully guaranteed at signing. The question becomes, is there going to be a guarantee in the third year? That if so, guaranteed for injury, and then when does it vest? What you want from a player standpoint, agent standpoint, you want a third or fourth year guarantee to vest a year early. So in this case, you'd want the 2027 guarantee, whatever amount it is, if there is any, to go from being injury guaranteed to fully guaranteed the third day of the league year in 2026, not when that year comes up in 2027.
Joel Corey, analyst for CBS Sports, is with us, former NFL agent. No one knows the contract game better. On, I think the outside, a lot of us look at the situation not from one side or the other. Like, I know the arguments the team will make. I know the arguments Terry's side will make. But if you kind of look at them in total and look at the big picture, Joel, I look at the Commander's cap sheet and I go, they got room. Like, they do have some guys they're going to need to sign next year. A lot of people talk, and I even did this early on before listening to some smarter people about it, full hand up mea culpa on that, but like talks about the Jaden extension. Well, the Jaden extension doesn't have to have a big number in the first year. The big numbers are going to be a couple years probably into that extension. When you're negotiating a contract with the team, how much credence do you give to what their cap situation is, where you might tell a client like, hey man, they really are kind of squeezed, versus a situation like this where you might look at their cap sheet and be like, why can't you give my guy what he wants?
Well, something I used to ask the team if they were saying, citing cap constraints, you tell me what cap number you need in the first year, in the second year for our deal, and I'll try to figure out a way that works for all of us to try to overcome that objection. But you are right in this situation. One, they don't pay anybody over $25 million per year right now. And two, when Daniels gets signed, presumably they'll do it as early as possible. So that would be in 2027. The cap number is not going to spike tremendously that first year, and maybe not in the second year. And in the third year is where you'll see the big jump. By then, Terry's going to be on his way out.
Right. So if you are on the Adam Peters side of this equation, and you have the room to pay him now, a lot of times in these deals, as you well know, but for the audience, Joel, what teams will do is they will try to bring the number down in the first year. There's a heavy cash flow because of the signing bonus, obviously. It's like, hey, here's your sign, here's your check. But they'll try to bring the base number down, and that way you have a low cap number in the first year of an extension. The Commanders are in a peculiar position in that they've got a ton of room right now. If you were on the agent side of it, or if you're considering this from Adam Peters' side of it, would you say like, hey, we're willing to give you a nice little base year bump in 2025 because we have the room to do it? Is that something that's a legit negotiating topic here?
Yeah, from the player standpoint, you really don't care as long as the money is secure. But to try to sell it to the team to get what you want or something done, you might propose, maybe I don't need a big signing bonus. We can keep the cap number close to the same, or maybe even increase this year's cap number to give you guys, the Commanders, more flexibility to get out of the deal sooner rather than later, because you wouldn't have as much dead money as if you gave them a huge signing bonus.
So when you look at the Commanders, you know, I think a lot of people also look at the Commander situation next year, this offseason, and say, well, if Terry plays out of his contract, then they could just franchise tag him. But they also have Marshawn Lattimore, who's going to want a new deal. They also have Laremy Tunsil, who's going to want a new deal. I guess those guys aren't technically expiring, but like, how much is there an anvil hanging over Terry McLaurin's head with that potential franchise tag? And what does that do to these negotiations?
Yeah, he probably doesn't want a franchise tag, because then you're talking about trying to get a deal a year later. And if age is already a concern, it'll be more of a concern next year, especially if he has some sort of drop statistically. And if he does have a drop, then you wouldn't franchise him anyway. That number is going to be slightly over $30 million, the way the franchise tag provisions work. It's going to be 120% of his prior year's salary, but that typically means cap number, not actual salary in this case. And if the Commanders have brought up, well, we could franchise him, the agent should know what that number is. And he's like, well, that's $30 million. If you're going to franchise them for $30, why can't we do a deal in that range? Yeah, you're going to have those two guys, particularly Tunsil, Lattimore, I don't know if it was the injuries with the leg injuries last year, but he didn't look like the Lattimore they thought they were getting when they traded for him. So he needs to play a lot better than he did last year for a contract to be a consideration. Tunsil is in a contract year in 2026, so I presume that's going to be a top priority in the offseason, if not sooner.
Yeah, they've got Frankie Louvu, who is running out of guaranteed money as well, Daron Payne. So there are plenty of guys that are going to be wanting new money, and it'll be on Adam Peters to get the cap sheet in order. Joel Corey with us for another few minutes here on the Hoffman Show. Joel, Terry, as I'm sure you saw, held that big, long press avail at the commercial shoot a couple weeks ago. And one of the points he made that I thought was interesting, I don't know how much validity is, that's ultimately going to be my question here, is it's interesting that he brings up the fact that he didn't play really a ton his first 2 years at Ohio State, that despite the fact that he is turning 30 in September, that he just doesn't have the mileage of a typical 30-year-old, and thus he doesn't feel like he should be subjected to the statistical predictions that the analytics heavy front office that the Commanders have are probably putting on him. How much validity do you think that argument holds for you? Because I think we know how much it holds with the team, and that is not very much.
Yeah, it's a fair point to raise. I did help represent someone who didn't have a ton of NFL mileage because the way his career started in Jimmy Smith. He didn't do anything his first 3 years. And once he turned 30, he played, I think, seven seasons, and six out of the seven, he had over 70 catches and 1,000 yards. So I can kind of see where he's coming from. But from what I understand, the new regime, ever since the ownership change, is more analytically driven. So then in the past, so they're looking at, okay, 31, here's what we kind of expect, or here's what's happened historically, 32, 33, and that's where the reluctance comes from. Although he can say, I had the best year of my career last year. I've been remarkably consistent. I'm durable, and I'm not slowing down.
Right. So that's an interesting point to raise too, because I think the team would say, yeah, like, we got you the quarterback and that's why you had the best year. Terry's like, well, this is what I can do with a great quarterback. That guy's not changing. Do you fall on a particular side of veracity of those seemingly, kind of two sides of a coin argument?
Yeah, I fall more on him because he can say, well, I'm quarterback proof because he had a rotating cast of less than stellar quarterbacks, and he still, last year was his fifth straight 1,000-yard right. season. So not every receiver can say that they can be productive regardless of who throws in the football. So here's what you get when you get me what looks to be a franchise quarterback. I'm only scratching the surface with this guy in Jaden Daniels. So I'm expecting to do bigger and better things is where he's going to go with that.
And then last but not least, Joel, I don't know how much you know about this and the scuttlebutt and this, that. So answer this however you like. There's been a lot of criticism of Terry's agent, and some of it has been more specific than others. So what have you made of whatever you've heard of the job that Terry's agent is doing representing his client in these negotiations, and what an agent's job is in a situation like this?
Well, an agent's job is to execute your client's wishes. So you kind of take your cues from your client. The trade request should only come if that's what the client wants. But a lot of times you'll see trade requests made out of frustration and the player really wants to be there. You can say what you want about Buddy Baker, but he did get a job. He did get a deal done once with the Commanders, different regime, and it was done without a holdout. So if he's holding everything to the guys in McLaurin's draft class, A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf, you got to look at the entire universe of the receiver market and not just tie it to those specific guys.
That's interesting, too. Obviously, it's a wide swath right now. You have it exploding at the top end. You have guys like Evans and Sutton taking what seem like far lesser deals compared to what McLaurin wants. And then I think the T. Higgins point is a great one, too, in terms of where the wide receiver one, wide receiver two cutoff is. So, Lord willing, this thing ends soon. Again, to wrap it all the way around, it feels like we all know where it's headed. It's just a matter of everyone arriving there that needs to. Joel, great stuff on this and all the other coverage you're doing elsewhere. I've heard you comment on Micah and all the other stuff. So really appreciate your time and your expertise, and we'll hopefully have you again on down the line.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That is our pleasure. Joel Corey, everybody, from CBS Sports. When we get back, we react to that here on the Team 980.